and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tuxa Lerzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
I come to you from Detroit, Michigan, where I'm recording on land belonging to the Ojibwe, Ottawa, Potawatomi, and Wyandot Nations.
And I come to you from North Canton, Ohio, where I am recording on land belonging to the Kaskaskia Nation.
Mm-hmm. These are all some of many nations out there in the world doing their thing, and we would like to acknowledge that.
Hell yeah.
Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. But today, this is a mini, and we're doing whatever the hell we want today. Yes. You can't stop us.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Nope. I'd like to see you try.
Seriously. Try and fail. Try and fail, you mean? Yes.
Fuck around and find out.
Yes. The finding out. Delicious. Oh,
it's delicious.
For others, not for me.
Yes.
A caveat. Yeah, yeah. When I find out, it's a tragedy.
No. No. Yeah. When others find out at your expense, though, that's chef's kiss.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. So this mini is a continuation of the story that I did last week, the Boston Tea Party. I talked about how that was a really revolutionary event, but just not in the ways that we are led to believe at all. I think it's pretty wild that kids are still being taught lies.
It's unbelievable, but we shouldn't be surprised that children are being taught lies.
We all have Al Gore's internet, though. We've had it for decades.
Yeah, we all know about the Al Gore rhythm.
But don't you think if you were a kid, you would just be Googling shit? Like, it would take me hearing one teacher's lie for me to just be Googling everything all the time.
Fact checking all of your teachers. Oh my God.
I hope those
kids are out there.
I don't know. I'm sure that they are. They definitely are.
I hope those kids are out there making their history teachers' lives a living hell.
Yeah.
But it's not the history teacher's fault either that the textbooks and the curriculum is garbage.
It's not like they can just make up their own lesson. There's a curriculum and it's lies.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that kids are pretty savvy, and I'm just envisioning like little me basically being like, actually,
totally,
you're wrong. In this mini, I want to dive a little bit deeper into the Sons of Liberty and their role in fanning the flames of rebellion.
Yes.
The Boston Tea Party was their event. And I want to talk a little bit more about some of the men involved and like what were the downstream consequences. Granted, this is going to be an overview. This is a mini-sode. I'm not going too deep, but they were the group that staged the demonstration. And I know that I learned that these men were kind of like everyday patriots, you know, just regular folks who stood up to the British and demanded representation with their taxation. And they really did that. However, they were not regular folks.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fantasy. So let's get into it. The Sons of Liberty, who were they and why should we care?
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
A loosely organized, sometimes violent, sometimes very, very violent political organization that was active in the colonies, in all 13 colonies eventually. They were founded to advance the rights of colonists and to fight against taxation by the British. This is kind of a lot of words to say that they were a political gang. And you will learn very quickly how gang-like they were. So they played a major role in most colonies battling the Stamp Act of 1765. Okay. I mentioned this in passing last week that the Stamp Act was what really set it off. They were not having this taxation thing. it's definitely worth a whole episode. So I'm really going to be glossing over the finer details of it.
Okay.
But what you need to know is that this group, this Stamp Act, I mean, instead of levying a duty on trade goods, the Stamp Act imposed the first direct tax on colonists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Specifically, the act required that starting in the fall of 1765, all legal documents, printed materials, and basically anything that involved paper needed to bear a stamp tax. And this tax was provided by these commissioned distributors, these agents of the crown, basically. They would collect this tax in exchange for this stamp that needed to be on all paper goods. And people lost it. This law applied to...
fuck that.
Right? Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
This law applied to wills, to like banknotes, to newspapers, pamphlets, even playing cards and dice somehow. What? And I'm like, you need official like dice? But why? So this one tax it set everything off, and rightfully so. Like no reason for all of this. And to do it all at once too was really jarring for the colonists.
Totally.
So once the Stamp Act was passed, a secret group of wealthy, mostly smugglers, but also just local merchants, they started calling themselves the Loyal Nine. They started meeting in secret. I'm like, wow, you guys are so cute with your little names. they started meeting in secret, and they were the precursors to the Sons of Liberty. They gathered crowds. They had this meeting place in Boston. Apparently, there was a tree that they just started calling the Liberty Tree. Sure. And I'm like, y'all are corny.
It's a lemon tree.
Basically, yes. So this Loyal Nine, they started organizing people at this tree. Every week or every few weeks, like, the crowd gets larger and larger, and everyone's gathering by this tree and basically talking shit about this Stamp Act. They're just like, can you believe it? Like, we need to do something.
Yeah.
So the Loyal Nine, they decided that they're kind of going to be like the hype men, the kind of like agitators. They were trying to push the crowd to do more than just, you know, talk about it. They wanted them to be about it.
Yeah.
So, at the encouragement of these Loyal Nine, who I'll get into later, but I'll just say now that they were like wealthy people. So like, if the rich people in town are telling you to like, let's fuck up shit, like you're going to fuck up shit, because who's going to stop you?
Yeah. It's weird, because like, I am all for, you know, fuck this tax. This tax is ridiculous. We shouldn't be paying
it's
this.
Stupid.
But also the fact that it's the rich people are the ones trying to organize against it makes me nervous and skeptical.
As you should be. So they basically encouraged a riot. And this riot went throughout the streets of Boston. They targeted taxable goods, which made sense. But more importantly, they targeted tax collectors, which put many colonial officials at risk from being tarred and feathered or even killed by this mob.
Yeah, we've seen this before.
Yeah. I don't know if you know, I learned this just through my research. Tarring and feathering used to be just like an act that was kind of confined to like sailors. Like, this was something that would happen at high sea with like mutinies. Okay. But the Loyal Nine and the Sons of Liberty, they're the ones who popularized tarring and feathering in the colonies.
Wow.
And they started with these officials of the crown who were pushing for the Stamp Act.
Trendsetters.
Yeah. they were ahead of their time. So they would tar and feather these British people, these British agents. And while these agents were incapacitated, they would go to their homes and rob them. And oftentimes they would burn their homes to the ground.
Wow.
In one case, this is from Wikipedia. Wikipedia. So there were these Boston rioters who raided the home of the lieutenant governor, a man named Thomas Hutchinson, and they stole an estimated £250,000 worth of his possessions.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is not just a Loyal Nine. This is the crowd that they inspired. It was just it was like an atmosphere of just, let's just burn everything. Let's take everything. Let's, you know, fuck these people trying to tax our dice. Get the fuck out of here. So the Loyal Nine, they recruited some powerful people in publishing because they wanted to get their word out. Their little Liberty Tree was not doing it, wasn't doing enough. So they started recruiting people from the Boston Gazette, and they began printing their pamphlets. And yeah.
But were they stamped?
No, they weren't. They weren't. Yes, they weren't stamped. It was like a double fuck you.
Yeah.
So this is how their message spread from Boston, where the Sons of Liberty or the Loyal Nine started. It spread out from Boston and was everywhere in a few months. So eventually the Loyal Nine, they began signing their papers that were being printed by the Boston Gazette as the Sons of Liberty instead of the, you know, the Loyal Nine. There was a lot of them now, so.
Okay, they more than nine of them.
Yeah, they decided they were going to like rebrand their, you know, resistance gang.
Sure.
And by doing this, they kind of came out of the shadows. They were never really, really in the shadows. People knew who they were, but now they were being more bold, more open. They were doing things in broad daylight. Sometimes they had like a, it seemed like they, like a parade once, like kind of through the town being like, this is who we are, what you gonna do about it type of thing. So they're getting they're feeling a little bolder with this new name. So the group in Boston was originally organized by Samuel Adams, and it quickly snowballed into a much larger network of just general resistance to the British crown. So what do you know about Samuel Adams?
Beer.
Yes. Okay. That's what most people know. Yeah.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, he was a brewer. Yeah. He was a dude. He liked beer. Yes. Uh-huh. He inherited his father's brewery.
Generational wealth.
Yeah. So his father was a merchant and a local politician. So he's not a man of the people at all. He like most of the Sons of Liberty, were men of influence. People love a rags to riches tale, especially Americans. Mm-hmm. I think we're very susceptible to that narrative. We want to believe it's so bad.
We just pretend that there were rags involved when it was really just riches to riches.
Yeah, riches to more riches.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that doesn't inspire confidence or like inspire, I don't know, industry to be like riches to more riches. So we have to invent some rags. So the Boston chapter was a who's who of power players. People were mostly smugglers, mostly distillers, and like some lawyers and doctors kind of mixed in. Of course, there were financiers because, you know, you gotta have your money.
Finance bros were there.
Finance bros were there, being themselves. These people, they were the ones who had the biggest stakes in keeping the power that they had. They didn't want any sort of change, even though their riches would be, yes, it would be taxed, but like they would still be rich in the grand scheme of things. Like today, you know, they would survive a tax. These men, of all of the men involved, could weather attacks. Mm-hmm. So we have this fable that these men were just like hooligans, that they, you know, they just were so called through their patriotism to rise up against the British. And that's kind of not true. They were thugs, but they weren't really hooligans. So I feel like now is time for a little break.
All right. Yeah. Need to soak this all in before we go further.
Yeah.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you. Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places.
Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail.
You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers. Cheers.
Okay. And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
So with the coordination of various Sons of Liberty chapters, the Stamp Act was repealed within a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like that's how quickly things got out of hand and the British were like, okay, fine.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
We don't need to tax your playing cards. And this is too much. Like that's how much chaos that they caused in various cities within the colonies.
All right, so Britain, good for them.
I think what, like, again, we can learn history. Like, this is a good story. Like, there's a reason why they rose up. But
yes,
I feel like it's helpful to be honest about, you know, who was really pushing for it, like the hardest. Mm-hmm. This was a big victory for the Sons of Liberty. However, it came at a price. The British Parliament, they passed an act called the Declaratory Act when they repealed the Stamp Act. This act wasn't really a law. It was more like a threat.
Okay.
Yeah. The act stated that the British King and the Parliament have the power to enact any and all legislation onto the colonies, but they're just not going to do it right now. But like, they can do it at any moment. Kind of thing.
Oh,
and it's like,
okay.
Yeah, they're like, they're basically saying that, okay, we repealed this act, but like, this is not for you to think that you won't be taxed in the future.
Sure.
And they were quickly taxed. And
shocking,
right? So the fact that this act was passed and like other acts would follow where they would, you know, be moving, changing the tax structure without the input from the colonies, it reinforced their no taxation without representation mantra. And it only made the movement stronger.
Sure. Yeah.
So despite the revolutionary and patriotic sentiments in the colonies, Britain still needed that money. They were coming out of their first world war. And like I said in the last episode, they were looking at the colonies like a bank, like they needed money. They had a lot of troops in the colonies maintaining order, but also protecting them from the native people. So they needed coin.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They passed the Townshend Act, which I did mention last week. And this was the act that tax like lead, paint, glass, like all sorts of things, and tea. And additionally, this act, it functioned as a search warrant. There was like a provision in it that said, hey, we can come into your home and look for smuggled goods, because they started to get hip. Well, I guess it wasn't really a secret, but they started to get more wise on the fact that there was a lot of smuggling going on.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people making money and not being taxed on that money. So this act allowed for agents of the crown to come into a private home and just poke about, being like, where'd you get that tea? There's no stamp on it. And this, again, further bolstered their cause. They're just like, now you're going to come into my house? Like, no, we're not doing this. So,
fuck out of here.
Yeah, I mean, they're going really far right now. I mean, they were going far before, but like, fuck all of this. Fuck all the way off. No.
Yeah.
So these smugglers, they were pissed. They were big mad. Eventually, the Sons of Liberty and Sons of Liberty member and fellow smuggler, John Hancock. His house was raided. I've heard of him. Yeah. He had that big old Trump signature. Uh-huh. He had a Sharpie back then.
Yes.
Oh my God. Did you see that DeSantis? So for people who don't know, DeSantis is literally just trying to be Trump. Like he's copying his hand movements, and now he's signing things with Sharpies.
Oh, jeez Louise.
Okay. Sir, be yourself. Stop being such a follower.
Yeah.
You're a grown man.
Yeah, I've seen all the like videos of him during speeches doing all of Trump's hand gestures and stuff.
Have you seen the side-by-side videos of the two of them?
Yes.
So good.
It's good and also terrifying because he clearly like thinks that this is what it takes to get idiots behind him.
Yeah, that's true. I was just like, look, in my head, I'm just like, look what a copier he is. Like, sir, you're grown. You don't need to like copy the popular bully. But apparently he thinks
it works.
Yeah, it does work. But so yeah, John Hancock is, his house is raided. They find all of his shit. He's in trouble because it's clear what he's doing. So he turned to a fellow Sons of Liberty member and prominent attorney, John Adams, future president, John Adams. He's the cousin of Sam Adams. Yeah, just nepotism.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I think first cousin, I believe.
Wow. Okay. You learn something new every day.
Yeah. Learn something every new.
I was just thinking that, but I was going to say it.
So Adams, he successfully defended Hancock despite all of the mountains of evidence he gets off. But smuggling is becoming increasingly risky and people are getting nervous. So under the Sons of Liberty, the colonists in Boston, they organize a boycott of all British goods sold in that colony, in that city, I mean. So Sam Adams, he's the one really, really pushing this. He's also a smuggler, so it helps his bottom line to be like, don't buy from the British, buy from me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This catches on and it spreads from Boston to other parts of Massachusetts and then, you know, further out into the colonies. Anyone who dared to sell British goods risk having their stores completely vandalized or destroyed. They were known to tar and feather just people owning businesses, people who claimed to be agents of the crown. They basically said that anyone who wasn't down with them was like an agent of the crown.
Sure. Which
maybe these people just don't like the fact that you're breaking shit. And they like don't want to be involved.
Yeah, that's not cool to like, you know, shop owners, they need to survive. They need a way to make money on their own. So you can't be like blaming them for selling things legally.
Yeah. Anyone who went against their like mob mentality, like could just get it basically.
Yeah.
So they were, just threatening people, creating this culture of like, everyone was kind of scared.
Sure.
And this resulted in a lot of just unrest in Boston because people who aren't with this gang are going to the British officials and being like, hey, like, can you do something? Like, they're kind of threatening me. Like, I'm afraid they're going to come into my house, not just my store, and like take all my shit because this is what they're doing. So there are these British troops in Boston. They're supposed to just be standing around, not causing any trouble, just keeping an eye on things, literally minding the peace was their role. And this failed. On the night of March 5th, 1770, there were 8 British soldiers who were just guarding this custom house in Boston. They opened fire on a group of angry colonists that were in their area. No one really knows why or like what happened. If they were shooting at them or there were rocks, like it seems like it happened so fast.
Yeah.
And when the smoke cleared, 5 colonists were dead and another 6 were really badly wounded. Mm. No one, not even the British soldiers, could recall how the shooting started in the first place or if there was an order given. It seems like maybe one person started shooting for whatever reason and the rest kind of followed suit.
Okay.
And this was a tragedy. There was a local silversmith and engraver who was also a member of the Sons of Liberty. His name is Paul Revere. He used this as a rallying cry. He called this a massacre. He wasn't the only one calling it a massacre, but it was kind of the perfect propaganda to ride around with.
And yeah, yeah.
Because he was an engraver, he depicted this event in whatever metal he was using, and he rode around with this image telling the tale. And he really helped to stoke patriotic feelings of, you know, general anti-British sentiments as well. Feelings of being like under threat, the underdog against this big empire. And soon news spread around the colonies. And according to papers, that this was an act of barbarism. This was a thing that Paul Revere himself would say when he was on his tour. And the rest was history. People,
yeah.
This was a big moment in U.S. history. And it all came about because of the Sons of Liberty.
Wow. Just a bunch of rich dudes.
Yeah. I mean, they had the mob as well, but yeah, they had the puppet hands for sure.
Yes, exactly. They were pulling the strings.
Yeah.
Just trying to get richer. Like, no, don't pay England, pay me.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Cause most of them were smugglers.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them were making money in the colonies, and there's nothing wrong with making money, but it's just like lying and saying that you're like a man of the people when you're getting the money from the people.
Exactly. Well, that's literally the foundation of this country.
Yeah. Yep.
Look, there's a few men of the people out there that I can think of.
Yeah.
That have never been don't even want to be close to the people.
No. No, they would be really upset if they were close to a solitary people.
Well, that's wild. This whole, I mean, it just keeps, there's like new layers to it. It's like a really horrible onion. That's like,
And there's just like so many
it's
people.
It's a rotten onion.
It is definitely a rotten onion, but there's like so many power players are involved so early. Like, even before the Declaration of Independence, you know, we have Hancock over here. Also, Patrick Henry, the Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death. Yes.
Yeah.
And he's the Sons of Liberty as well.
Of course he is. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that story. An oldie but a goodie. That's our first Halloween episode, right?
Yes. It was an episode where that people loved, and I was, I got a lecture.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really, you know, really kind of
silly.
Stupid. Yeah. Silly. Silly is a better word. Yeah. Yes. Tim is like, don't say the episode that you're currently recording is stupid. Like, okay. Yes, Tim. But it was it was the ghosts, air quotes, around, you know, all this ghastly evidence just being in a basement.
Yeah.
It tickled me.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've learned a lot about our founding fathers today and who they were. Just a bunch of rich dudes who didn't like paying taxes.
Yep. Tale as old as time. Yeah, we're taught that these men are just like regular Joes, just trying to make a living.
But also sort of like superheroes at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's true. Yeah, they're definitely mythologized for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I haven't even been drinking. I've just been drinking water today because I'm tired. It's been a long day. It's the end of the day for us. You've got some wine. Is it nearing emptyhood?
Yeah, it is almost empty. I'm drinking it slowly because I've had very little water today. But I'm already like feeling it.
All right. Well, we're done either way. We're finishing it up. So, thank you guys so much for listening to Beyond Reproach, the mini-sode. This has been Tux Lurzel.
And Stephanie Domingo.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to our audio editor, Dev. We could not do this without you.
We couldn't.
All right, guys. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Bye. 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 Bye.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Reproach. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. And we also have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.